My name is Zoe, the co-host of Not Superwoman. I am the granddaughter of French, English and Irish immigrants now living on Burrurong land. I acknowledge that we meet on the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional owners of the land in which this podcast was recorded. We pay respects to elders past and present. I recognise and respect their cultural heritage, beliefs and relationships with this land.
Welcome to this week's episode of Not Superwoman.
Welcome, Rat.
Hello.
We're back.
We're soldiering on with another insightful episode, or so we think.
Yeah, I loved, well, we're bringing you Verity Tuck today, and God, she's inspiring and makes me want to start. Well, I kind of did do a bit of a floral business back in the day with Tori, and she went on to have a great business and I didn't. So we're bringing you Verity Tuck, who with her colleague Hannah started up Lovely, a flower delivery service that they recently sold for $35 million.
Yes. So she was in the Australian Financial Review and talking about not only the sale of her business and the break that she sort of had, but during the break, how she has made some wholesale lifestyle changes. But then she also realised that she really is built to work and work hard. She loves the hustle, and she even sort of said the glint in someone's eye about when they want to do a startup and how inspired they are. And then she's gone on to create with her husband the Goldie app, which is a it's an AI personal assistant for busy families, and it's about an app that basically they've built to try and be an antidote for the mental load. Because she's just we talked to her about it in this episode, but the overwhelm that parents are feeling about where their kids have got to be when all the school comms, all the WhatsApps, all the text messages, everything, it's a lot.
Yeah, so, and I think this correlates all of that on the one platform. So you have more time to do the things that you want to do, which is not personal family admin.
No, exactly. But, yeah, really great to talk to her about both life, lifestyle and business, and very grateful that she came on and shared her insights with us. Welcome, Verity. Welcome to this week's episode of Not Superwoman. We're very honoured to be sitting down with a very clever and go-getter, Verity Tuck. You might have seen Verity recently. She was in the Australian Financial Review for an article for her app that she has just launched with her husband, Mike, called Goldie. And we were totally fascinated by this and wanted to get you on and pick your brains, because not only is your career journey to date been incredibly impressive, but also Goldie is literally like something in my life that I've been searching for. And we'll go into more detail what it's about, but it is, we just want to welcome Verity.
So thank you for having me. It's really nice to be here.
And we're very excited to be, nutting out the mental load with you, which is...
But also, I feel like I read that article, Verity, in the Financial Review, and I was like, that could be us with the podcast. Just got to stick it out another kind of 10 to 15
and then sell it. Yeah, maybe one day. Well, I doubt it. But we'll see. We can only try.
No, you never know.
Well, that being said, you've got an incredibly impressive background, because you did have a startup business that you started from the ground up, which was called Lovely, L-V-L-Y, and it was a same-day delivery flower service that once you got it truly up and running, you managed to sell. Can you take us back to a bit of an overview of what it was like starting up Lovely? And also, I guess I'm interested in how on earth do you start up a business like that and juggle the family dynamic? So
just a little bit.
Yeah.
Sure. So it was probably, I met Hannah, who was the co-founder with me, so my business partner, we were working at the same digital advertising agency in Sydney, and we were paired together to go out to clients and pitch work and, you know, get the work through the studio. And so we became very familiar with each other, fast friends and had very complementary skill sets. So she was more strategic, great with sales and pitches and all of that side of things. And I was very good at the doing and the executing and the team building side of things. And so we also both came from entrepreneurial kind of families. Both our dads started businesses when they were young and grew it, and we were very privy to that from an early age. And I think it was like the hard work ethic had never, like, it wasn't difficult for me. Like, that was kind of, it's been innate in me. I'm a hard worker, and I'm, you know, so yeah. that part of it didn't scare me.
Yeah, what you saw growing up is really, yeah, how you see work and life. Yeah, and
patterned in me that it was just normal kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then we both saw, like, living away, I was in, both living in Sydney, and I'm from Melbourne and she's British from the UK, and we both saw this gap in the market of same day delivery. So it was, you know, getting big in the UK and the States, but wasn't really getting anywhere here. So we're interested in that, but we're also really interested in this premise of making people's days, like how do you make people smile? Like something really beautiful, like a purpose-driven business that is meaningful and light and happy.
Mm.
So we started with the purpose of making people's day, and we both love product. And fun fact, flowers weren't actually part of the product set until the last minute. So it was originally going to be just almost like a hamper business gifting of sorts, just gifting. And then I was like, I feel like we're missing a trick not trying flowers. And Han's like, well, neither of us are florists. And I was like, so what? No, let's give it a go. So, yeah, we both took just a quick night course and we thought, we'll try it. I mean, you've got to try things to see what sticks. And, of course, we then become a flower business. But, yeah, we started in the back room of the house I was living in at the time in Windsor. Tiny little place, but, you know, we had minimum lines, you know, minimum orders of chocolate and candles and all the basics, and then we'd take it in turns going to the flower market and coming back, and we'd make, like, to start with, it might have been 10 posies a day, and we just learnt and grew from there.
I mean, that's within itself bloody impressive. I mean, the fact that you were like, let's give flowers a go and did a one-night course is just, I would, safe to say, I would get myself in such a muddle.
But also so much fun, like with someone that you obviously have a great relationship with and, you know, trust.
Mm.
Like, because did you keep working your full-time jobs and do this on the side, or did you resign?
No, I ended up resigning. I was ready. I was so chomping at the bit. And my husband, or my partner at the time, he's now my husband, he said, I'll support you. Let's, you know, we can live on one wage. We had no kids then, a lot easier. But just do it. Got to do it for a year at least, see what sticks, and I'll support you. And Hannah was the same, except she had a visa issues, like she had to stay employed at the time. She was waiting for her, I think, de facto, or I can't remember which one it was, visa to come through. So she had to stay employed in the country to stay in the country. So we had to do a bit of a dance in the first year of trying to, I was full-time and she wasn't. How do you make that fair? And that was really tricky to navigate, because if you don't nip that in the bud and have that hard conversation up front, resentment can build pretty quickly, even though you're good friends, because you both want the same thing and you've got this dream to build this business. And we were always very clear that whilst we wanted it to be a purpose-led business and one that felt good to build, we also both had this naive dream of one day selling it. And a lot of naivety played into building this business. We had no idea how hard it would actually be to bring it to life. And yeah, I'm sitting here grateful that I was able to see that whole life cycle of a business, being able to sell it at the end. But regardless, yeah, we went in with this, a lot of determination and hoping to God that would be able to see it right through to the end. But yeah, it's tricky in the beginning.
Something that I've heard you say before is that you said if you go into something with good intentions and stick with those intentions, then that that something will come of it. And it really, to be honest, it gave me a bit of hope with this podcast.
Gave you hope.
But it was true. I mean, you sort of, when you're sticking to something that is really true to your nature and determination and your values, I do feel like it's something, it's easier to stay dedicated and stick it out. But I did wonder, at what point did you start a family, and how did that factor into the complications of running a startup business?
Yeah, it was about a year in that I got pregnant. So I had Gracie the year after that. And that, it was, we didn't know what we didn't know. Neither of us had had kids. And
no.
then went on to have two kids, but we were very lucky that we had them not at the same time. So we're always able to have one of us in the business pretty much full time while the other one went and had a baby and then gradually came back into the workforce. And we both just were very determined to, I guess rightly or wrongly, you know, looking back on it, I kind of wish or hoped I'd had a bit more time with the kids when they were young, but I equally wanted my career to work, and I'm driven, very driven. And so the balance of that was always, you feel that guilt as a mum that you're not there, but then you have this guilt that you're not at work, and it's just, it's not useful.
It's so hard. And I do think that is a common thread with the people that we chat to who have businesses and who've had children, because it all happens at the same time often.
Yes. Mm.
I don't know how you tackle it, because have those feelings.
Exactly. And like, again, similarly to conversations we've had with guests, I'm continually learning about how there's just a double-edged sword to everything. Like, you wouldn't be in the position that you are now to make other decisions on behalf of your family had you not gone through, grown that business and been able to sell it, has ultimately come at a great, contribution to the greater good of your family, whereas I can understand it's the time piece that plays, the time that it's taken and the time that's taken away is something to grapple with too. So it's just feels like with every good outcome, there's not a sort of tough call to make.
Yeah, and I think we always think when I do X or when I get to that time or having achieved that, I will be happy or satisfied or whatever it is. And I think we have to flip that around and be, really okay with the beauty of the process, the ups and the downs of that, and really like be present within that, because that's, at the end of the day, we sold Lovely and I left and I was exhausted. And then now with, in almost 2 years since that happened, I miss the making, the doing, the, the feeling part of something. And I'm like, even if it was a bad day, I'd take that over feeling not part of something.
Mm. So it's funny. A lot of people, as you said, get to a point where they think, if I sell Lovely, and for you by example, sell Lovely and then we've got some breathing room to make other decisions. And for example, you made the decision to move up the coast to New South Wales and be by the beach and commit some time, family time. I think it's funny because it also, with you particularly talking to you, you also realise you have that fire in your belly to be committed to something and be committed to a process and a startup, which I find really interesting. So can you talk us through, though you did mention the sale process being incredibly taxing on you at the time, and you did have the moment where you were like, I'm not going to do this again. Can you talk me through what contributed to you from going from flipping, going from I'm not going to do this again to actually I will?
It's everything's better with hindsight, isn't it? look, the acquisition process or sale process was probably about a year in entirety, and that's from we got an offer off the bat from someone we'd had conversations with, and then we went out to tender the business basically to create a bit of competitive tension, which it did, and we ended up being acquired by the guys that originally put the offer in with better terms. But the whole process was quite, you know, it really makes you question what are you doing this for, and what are you willing to give up, because it does become, well, for me it was my third child. You know, I spent a lot of time on it. I loved what we did. I loved the people. But there was that deep-seated exhaustion of having had this same dream every day for almost, I think it was 7 years, and being, you know, accountable for that, like with a co-founder, but that accountability of, you know, when something goes wrong or if things don't stack up, you've got to answer to that. And that was tiring after 7 years, especially a really physical business, perishable goods. It was quite hard on the body as well, like lots of lifting and pickpacking and pallets of boxes and learning how to use a walkie stacker. Like there's things that I never thought would be in my job description, but like that's the beauty of it as well. And, you know, I think I let go with that with ease, knowing that we'd set up our team at Lovely in a really great way, that everyone was ready to take the next step up when we left. And they're all still there today, which is testament to, I think, you know, the business, and also Limitless, who acquired us, have given Lovely room to breathe on its own, which they promised they would. That was part of the deal. And so the team's still there and still growing it, and that feels good that we didn't, you know,
oh, that's
it was really
fantastic.
Important that we didn't destroy what we had created. So that exhaustion, yeah, came out in lots of different ways, you know, how, you know, mental health in just all, yeah, physically it came out. I just couldn't sleep, or for months afterwards, like all this stuff, you know, I'd get acne all down my, like my neck and my chin, like being completely honest, like it all started just bubbling up because I'd pushed it down over that year. And then finally I felt after, it was probably 9 months after the sale, that I started feeling a bit more like myself again. And then I thought, what am I missing? I'm missing connection with people. And I do love startups. Like I love the energy of seeing someone, the glint in someone's eye when they tell you their idea, or like how, like problem solving. I love it. I love helping people get around it. I love doing it myself. So I signed myself up for an angel investment course through Startmate, which is a big like startup community. And it just reignited that fire that I knew was so close to being to burning again. And I had this problem that I really wanted to solve, and I thought now's the time. I couldn't not do it when it was so clear it needed to be done. I think I just couldn't not.
So that being said, I keep jumping in.
Yeah, I was like, don't have time. So, okay, in saying that, what was the catalyst for you to decide to kind of make this huge, bold move to the coast with your family?
Was it the stress, or was that?
I think it was a few things. Our second child, a boy, he's a bit more on the sensitive side, and I always had this feeling, I wonder if he would do well away from all the stimulus, all the comings and goings and the everything. And so there was that, as well as I feel at my best by the sea. Like I just always have. I seek out the water. I'm a water baby. I love it. I could just sit on the beach all day. It's not about sunbaking. It's about the, I don't know, that feeling you get.
Totally.
It's that, yeah.
That's
well,
me.
It's the fresh air, the space, oh. the rhythm of the waves.
Yeah, like exactly.
Cathartic about it.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. And also the, you know, why not? Because, you know, we'd come to a stage where we could financially now do it. Could we do it with our work or with Mike's work? Yes. Like, we have to in this life, if we're given these opportunities, you know, now that we've sold the business, we have a this obligation almost to, like, see through some of our dreams because of that, you know, the ability to do it now, like the opportunity to do it.
Mm.
So we're like, if we're not going to do it now, we won't do it. So why not? So we're like, let's try it. And Mike,
I love that mentality so much.
Mm, yeah. Same.
Why not?
Why
and
not?
And you can always move back.
Exactly. Like, that's what we kept saying. What's the worst
thing that could happen?
What's the worst thing that could happen? And Mike's a bit like, he's very open to adventure. But he's also a homebody. So, like, we were like, we're pretty happy though. We've got a great community here. But we're like, let's just do it.
Mm.
Let's do it.
So what do you think's been the highlight of that change? And then I guess the low light?
I'll start with the low light. Low light is the kids' adjustment. You know, my son Monty has really struggled with anxiety since getting there, which has been, it's really been a learning curve for us. You know, they are our biggest teacher, and we now have to parent him differently in a good way. Like, we've had to learn how to manage his emotional regulation and teach him new tactics. We're seeing an OT. But that, you know, when you're in the eye of the storm with that sort of thing, you know, you're so in so much pain for them. You kind of stop looking for solution. Like, you're just in the pain moment, and you feel like you're grappling and you're cornered. And then when you start getting into solution mode and building up the momentum again back into routine and all these things you enjoyed doing. So we're getting there now into the year. So that's been the hardest part, but by far the healing side of being in nature is just like I'd forgotten. Like, I grew up a lot on the farm with my cousins and I just loved it. And you forget when you're in the city. I love the buzz of the city. I love it. And I seek it out sometimes. But the calming nature is just, it's what we need as human beings. Like, we can't be on our phones. We're not built to be like that. Mm. And I knew I was seeking something to calm my soul. Mm. And also because we've only had each other, we don't know many people there or barely any. We've re-established an amazing family unit within us four and, like, have way more time to just do that. We don't have anyone to lean on, so you don't lean on anyone. And that, I think there's beauty in that, just to, when we are with the kids, we are way more present, I've found. So that's been nice.
Yeah, it's an amazing, I can only imagine, amazing experience. And something I wonder, that had you not made that call to make that move, would you have had the brain space and capacity in the pace of the city to recognize, for example, Monty's needs?
Probably not.
Mm. I wonder, like,
maybe not for years.
Mm. It's something that, whilst you might feel like you're in the eye of the storm at the moment, it was a storm that maybe was always brewing, and it's afforded you the opportunity to tackle it. Whereas sometimes the pace of, I struggle in the pace of a city life, and I often dream about shuffling us all off to the coast because I
thought you were about to say shuffling off.
No. Shuffling off the ledge.
Time my days where I'm like, let's just wheel them.
Cave in. But I often dream about removing us to slow us down and just take time to take stock. So I do think it's a credit to you that you have made that choice, but also have been able to facilitate and tackle the eye of the storm.
Thank you. I think as mothers we always underestimate how strong we are, and also our ability to problem solve through that stuff and learn from it. Like, we're so open to learning, And I think we're often the ones that are the conduit for our counterpart or our partner to learn as well. We're pretty amazing beings, women.
It's funny, I heard Kate Langbrook actually said it at a lunch that we went to. She called her husband, she said, use the term conduit to dreams. And I think it's such a good description because one of you has to be, you know, and one of you sort of feeds the information and the knowledge and the growth to the other.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Charlie will say that's me and he's like, stop doing it. Because I keep chucking ideas and random things out there and he's like, you need to stop.
Slow.
And I'm like, you've got to have adventures.
Yes.
And do things. Like you can't, I don't know.
Well, it's really...
Change is good.
Yeah.
Change is good.
Yeah, and it changes growth, I think. It comes with... so many challenges, and it's such a romanticized idea, but I think it also brings so much self growth because you have to just figure it out as you go because it's unknown.
Yeah.
So that being said, you chatted to me about the level jump of the mental load when your daughter started school. Was that the seed for Goldie?
Yes. I'd heard about the juggle when school starts, but again, you don't know what you don't know. And I just, when it was nearing the end of the sale process, but it was so intense. Like they do due diligence on your business. So you've got to like find your liquor license that you keep up to date, but which folder, you know, all those tiny little intricacies of running a business that you've got in control, but you can't remember where it is. Like I'm trying to find all this stuff and the team doesn't know about the sale and all this stuff and Gracie starts school. And I'm a pretty organised person, like project management background, like I run a tight ship most of the time. And I just felt like I'd missed a memo. Like I was like, was there like a preschool something that I've missed because
information.
Information, I don't know, but I didn't, when does a library book go in, the bag or – and which things and what and Harmony Day and $2 for sausage sizzle and all these school communications are bombarding you and you know the fixture for netball or your dance recital and the the costumes.
This is giving me anxiety.
I know. Listening to it. And then they get invited to everyone's birthday party and you're like, oh my gosh, was that a physical invite or did someone text message me that? I cannot remember.
But that's the thing. It's rolling through all of the WhatsApps, all the text messages or, for example, even our school principal was talking to us at the start of the year because he's not a huge fan, I think I was telling you, a huge fan of WhatsApp because he's like, the information can get misconstrued in WhatsApp because it's just casual second-hand or third-hand information. Get it from the three different school apps. And I
you're like,
and I was
sounds
like,
good.
Yeah. Okay, I'm like, just add that to the other like five different forms of
the apps send you the notification, but then we also get three emails.
Yeah.
And then I've got like 50 WhatsApp that I also now mute.
Oh, exactly.
And they're like, Zoe, you never got that. And I'm like, because I can't mentally take that on board at the moment. Like
it's too much. Too much.
It is. I honestly.
But you're here to help us.
Yes. Or we revert back to the days where we just had a home phone and.
Yes, please. I talked about that the other day. I was like, oh, how much simpler that would be in so many ways.
If you weren't home, you missed the call and that was that. But that being said.
I just can't understand. Like, I've got two children. They're twin girls in the same year level, they do the same things. I have offered other things, but they just gravitate towards that.
The same.
I'm like, if I had three children in multiple year levels, all different sports, all different interests, I would genuinely be in a clinic.
Or potentially like, different schools as well. We've got
exactly. Like how
crazy.
How,
I know. How, exactly. So I mean that just it got a beat, like something ignited in me, like, why hasn't someone solved this? What is it that needs to be solved for this, for parents to feel more at ease with what should be a pretty, like it goes on for a long time, right, school? So why isn't this easier for parents? Because all of a sudden we've got this society where most households have to have double incomes to live and work, like to cover costs. So you've got the double burden of work and then your household management. And the amount of hours women spend per week on like household management and mental load items of like planning, organizing, remembering things for their family is it's between 20 and 35 additional hours on top of work hours.
That's crazy.
And men spend half of that. So 90% of women are the chief organizers of their household. And so I was like, okay, something needs to be done because there's two sides to it. There's the administrative load of just the admin that you get and need to read and need to plan and then having that costume ready for book week and all of that. So it's administrative. And then there's the emotional load that's attached to it. So if I forget that birthday party or if I forget to get that, you know, the will my kid feel left out or, you know, it's the emotional burden of will you let the team down.
If you missed an assembly or something, like the guilt that comes with that and the thought of your child waiting there.
Exactly.
You know, looking for you.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yeah,
it's awful.
Or, you know, the bloody footy dress up day and then you get to school and you realise and then everyone's in costume and your kid's in tears because you're just like, oh, my God.
And then you've got to be at work.
And you're like, oh, my
gosh. I've really failed as a parent.
Exactly, those moments.
Right.
So, yes.
So that's when between the fire and your belly to do and involve yourself in something that was like a startup business again and then your frustration with trying to figure out, I mean, I labelled it like an antidote of the mental load was your purpose and driver for Goldie.
Yes. So that drove me to go, how could we solve this? And looked at all the different ways that it, you know, the mental load in it, you know, it's not a silver bullet, but how could we reduce that for women especially, and looking at available technologies and all the different ways you could solve it. I was intrigued by AI because, you know, it is the buzzword of the moment, but it's for a good reason. If used in the right way and in context can be super helpful. And, you know, it's, you know, getting a lot of traction in enterprise, you know, big companies and corporate worlds for like absolutely reducing administration and helping with productivity in the workplace. Why can't we have that in our household? Because effectively it's another workplace. Like we're the CEO of our homes.
Mm.
Why do we not have tools to help run our homes so that we can have more time for, you know, time with the kids or time to get back to study or exercise or do what we want to do.
Do the family or the well-being component, which is it's funny because it's so true how you put it, that household tools, like it seems so obvious, but yet it's such a well, until now, missed market.
Yeah, so we are using the power of AI to help busy families. So if you can forward any emails from school, fixtures from footy teams, birthday party invites or like take a photo from a notice board at school and you just chuck it into Goldie and it will process it as an event. You can... By next week, you'll be able to add recurring events, and by the end of the month, we'll have the ability for family sharing so that you actually can share the mental load with your partners. And beyond that, there's so many more applications that we can, you know, tinker
keep layering
with. Yeah,
on.
So many layers to.
So you started this with your husband.
Yes.
How has that been?
I love it how everyone looks at me like, you're crazy.
I'm like, if I worked with Ali, we would be divorced. But
I think if I worked with Tom, I'd be in prison because I would have killed him.
So many people. I mean, I met Mike working. So we actually, at the time that I met Hannah, my business partner for Lovely, Mike was the third part of our dynamic. So he was head of creative at the agency we work for. So we were actually a trio that were sent out to win client work. And so we became friends to start with. and worked together for many years before we got together. But yeah, so I knew we can work together well, and he's just a all-round legend of a human. He's very patient and just as steady as an ox. Like, he's that consistent guy. He has his passions. I call it passion talk when he gets into it, but he's very, like, we've again got complementary skills, and we work so well together that we've always said we should work together again. And so this is the project.
It's good because the foundation was there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you sort of had that background. I think, like, the idea of, like, Tom and I weren't, they, like, had no work and business correlation whatsoever. So to start something together once in a relationship or married is probably
weird. Well, you did start a family together.
Well, yes, that's a whole nother thing.
Business within itself, my gosh.
Yeah. No, but that is, it is true, though. It comes down to, you know, your complementary skill sets and what you're both bringing to the party here, and it obviously works really well.
Yeah.
And you employ, how many people do you employ?
Well, at the moment, so Mike's other job, so he is one of the founders of Shadowboxer, which is a venture studio, which isn't a very known term here, but basically they help startups and scale-ups build their product, you know, digital products like apps and all that kind of thing, as well as the strategy and creative and brand around that. And they often, as part of that process, get paid in fees but also take equity as part of the deal. So they get in early and it's called creative capital. So they spend time helping to build these businesses that they believe in for free, part of it, and they take equity in return. So they get in early and hope that the return will come, and it's almost like they're part of, you know, their skin is in the game. So they put even more effort into making sure that these products are a success. So it made sense when we decided to go ahead with Goldie that we'd build it with Shadowboxer to start with, because we wanted to get to market quickly. So they've got proven team that we trust, engineers ready to go. So probably not the cheapest way to have done it, but it was the quickest, and we needed to get to market to start learning about what works, what doesn't, because, you know, we had in our heads what we thought would work, but until you actually put it in front of a customer, you don't actually know much.
Yeah, it's interesting. So two things come to mind. One was you were saying that, because I've actually signed myself up, I'm on the wait list for Goldie, but you were saying that you release it in stages so that you can understand from the customer what they need. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, referring to the AI conversation that we just had earlier, is that I recently was at a summit where they had a panel up talking about technology, but particularly AI. And it was funny because it was slightly mixed in. Some people had really positive and passionate kind of views on it, and others were like a bit more conservative. Mm-hmm. But my understanding of it was, because for me, obviously, I'm at home full time, and outside of making this podcast, I don't really do much with technology. But my understanding of it is that AI was described at this conference as a giant filing cabinet that already has the files that exists, and what it does is it has the ability to collate and pull the appropriate files from the already existing information. Is that
pretty much? Yeah, it uses its ability to quickly computerize, I guess, and summarize words.
Yep.
To then, depending on what you're needing to use it for and what implementation, that it pulls it out and recontextualizes it. So, but I mean, enterprise use it slightly differently. They're obviously digitizing, and like they might have hundreds of files that, you know, they want their employees to be able to access any part of that really quickly. AI is super brilliant. It can like summarize, you know, hundreds of years of work, really. The way Goldie Works is a little bit different. It's quite a niche in terms of these emails and the actual emails from the school, and, you know, you might take a screen grab of a WhatsApp conversation or an email from the coach about when a few of the games are. It's in natural language, so it needs to be able to read this and gain context from these particular pieces of information that you're giving the model. So it's been a learning curve, learning how to, based on the types of emails parents typically get, how do you pull out that information and actually make it useful and the right parts of that email? Because there's a lot of guff around the actual parts that you need to put into your diary or remember.
A lot of fluff.
Yes. Mm. it is like that.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it?
Mm.
Going back to, I guess, a lifestyle component, I mean, you were incredibly busy and in turn exhausted from Lovely, and then you took some time out to be able to smell the roses of what you've achieved and focus on the family, but then had this fire in your belly to figure out the mental load component of parenting and school commitments and children. But how do you then temper and manage the business startup life with family and commitment life?
Yeah, it's, I'm going in with a different perspective this time. Like I think I just like bashed it until it worked last time, you know, like you just bang it, keep, you're like, I'll get it in there somehow. But this time I'm going in with a lot more intention of, I know how to work and be okay with the fact that I might not get a lot done as long as it's the right things done in a day. I was a lot more about doing the hours previously and less about the, you know, the outcome. And that's completely flipped this time around, is like, I know what I need to get done and outcome by when to have the right like flow and effect for the team or whatever by when. How that looks in a day, I'm completely flexible with. And rather than I go to work to do my hours and I think I'll get some productive things done, I'm a lot easier on myself about what that looks like. Mm. And I think that pays in dividends. Like it just, I'm around a lot more. And also I'm willing to build the team up sooner rather than later, rather than continually just like taking it all on my shoulders.
Taking the hit.
Yeah.
Mm.
So what would you do for yourself and like managing, you know, I guess your mental health?
I've always been pretty good with this. So I'd say I'm a very balanced person. I think balance basically sums me up. Like I've do everything in balance and consistency. Like I've never struggled to exercise. I actually love it. I love how it makes me feel. I don't struggle to do that, thankfully. I think it was in my mid-20s, I didn't really know what anxiety was, but I knew, you know, something was going on where I was like becoming like very fearful of certain things, and like the physical outcomes of that was like, you know, heart palpitations and starting to avoid things and all this. And I was told about this kinesiologist in Melbourne, and he's changed so much about how I see myself and how I've learned about my body. And I still see him to this day. He's probably 15 years on now. And he's been such a support for me and my mental health. And I just implore anyone to do whatever is right for them, whether it's kinesiologist, psychologist, counsellor, all of that. It's not one thing that's going to solve it. It's going to be consistency and, you know, I always say it's death by 1,000 cuts in a business. You know, like you look at your P&L at the end of a month and you're like, how did we not do well? My gosh. And you're like, it wasn't one thing. It was 1,000 things that didn't go quite right. It's the opposite in mental health as well. It's so many little things you've got to be consistent with, of like try and get that sleep and be kind to yourself and the words you use talking to yourself, and if you can fit in the kinesiologist or whatever, your exercise and time with your partner. Like it's all hard. It's hard to fit everything in. But once you get into a bit of a rhythm and see the effects of what it can look like when you're not feeling depleted and anxious all the time.
Mm.
It's a different life.
You can live a happy life.
Or happier.
But you can. You can see the balance there when you look back to times in your life where you haven't done that and the wheels fall off the wagon, and then when you do, and how much happier everyone is because you all feed off each other.
You do.
Well, that's the thing.
You know, at home and at work. Sorry.
Yeah. No, but exactly like you said, the word consistency. And that's the key, I think, is that we kind of grab at time and go, oh, okay, I'm just going to do that one Pilates class and, you know, and then that'll make me feel better. But the reality of it is, if you're not consistently trying to tap into each part of your life, whether it be as a mum and then as a person and as a partner, then something, you know, a ball is going to fall. And I'm realising that even more now, because I definitely for a period didn't do the well-being component very well at all. Mm. And I'm realising it is a consistency factor. Like I have to consistently start. I can't be full pelt. I was one of those people that I would go and buy the 10-pack of Pilates, go 10 times, feel much better for like a month, and then I wouldn't go for six. And I was like, that made no sense. So I'm trying to temper the consistency much better so I can have a better outcome. But it doesn't end. I think that's the other thing I'm learning, is you don't reach a certain point and go, I don't need to do that anymore. It's all a part of it.
Lifestyle decision.
Yes, it is.
That's, you know, it's not an overnight thing, as you just said. It is changing your life. Yes. And the way you live it.
Mm. And I hate the word maintenance, but it is. You literally have to help your body, mind, soul maintain itself, because there's so much that it's like it's not understanding all the inputs you're giving it sometimes because you have a bad day or whatever. If you don't maintain the, you know, I am safe, I'm worthy, I'm all of those things, it's going to start believing the bad things and the fearful things that get into your head from the news or whatever. So we do have to, like, the yin and the yang, it's got to balance each other out, the male and the female energy. That's why it's like a real thing. It's the intellect and the intuition. Got to have a bit of both.
Definitely. It's funny with Goldie, going back to Goldie, because I think about everything that we're talking about holistically, and what I do really appreciate it about it is that you've mentioned previously, you know, the idea that it takes a village to raise a family, and in these days we don't have, not everyone has that village, and you know, the nice part about what you're building is that the idea that you are trying to facilitate a village in some capacity in the new technological world for someone that may be completely overrun and overwhelmed by raising a family, and you can have that village within, you know, your phone. Of course it requires nurturing and love and support externally too, but it's a real credit to you to try and tackle that for those that really need the extra guidance and support, because as I said, I'm on the waiting list and I'm definitely need it.
we need all the help we can get, right?
Like,
we
bloody hell. So what in hindsight have you reflected on with the startup and then motherhood?
I know. Yeah.
It's just something to chuck that in at the
Look, I think, like, kids are resilient, but they do need, you know, consistency of parenting. So I think whatever that for me, startup resonates the energy, as I said before, the problem solving. And because that was filling my cup up, I felt better as a parent. Like, I found that I'd go to work and come back and be a better mum. And I think that that's okay. I used to beat myself up so much about being away from them when they were young, and, like, you know, I'd have help from my mum and dad a bit, but we had to get a nanny for parts of it, and you're like, oh gosh, a stranger is bringing up my kid, and you'd beat yourself up and feel guilty. And I'm like, that feeling is so normal, but it's got no use. And so I'd try to rechannel that into as long as I return and I'm present and don't, you know, then extend my work hours into the night while they're around. And so I stuck to that. I was pretty good with not all the time. You can never be all the time because you get calls outside of hours all the time. But, you know, I really did try to, when I got home, you know, it was time for the family. And I think as long as you find whatever brings you peace to be a working mum and still feel like you're nurturing your mother and intuitive side, I think that's okay.
Mm.
That's what I've come to realise. Trust that side of yourself. There's no point in beating yourself up.
Do you have a hindsight in doing a startup as well, like as something that you reflect back on and go, oh, I'm learning? I guess, I've learned differently from Lovely to Goldie.
I think I wish I had naivety was quite helpful for us in our first startup, and that's not going to run anymore probably, but
it's good for us.
Zoe and I. Great.
We're as green as they come.
It is. It's really good because you're curious, and I'm at a new stage of curiosity in a different way. But I think the green grassrootsness of a startup is finding out things about yourself that are quite shocking sometimes, like, or things you don't necessarily want to own. So I came from like this operational project management, client management background, but to me it seemed a bit dull. Like it's kind of the boring parts sometimes. That's how I used to view it, right? And then when you realize, actually, if I make this my superpower, it can be pretty cool. And so I lent into these are my strengths, and be okay with that and just make them even better. And as soon as I let myself do that, things changed. And I think I wish I'd known that sooner because, you know, Han was really good at the, the marketing and social media and a lot of the things that were a bit more, I guess, glamorous in inverted commas. They're not really actually glamorous, but they appear to be, right? Mm. And I, you know, at the start I'd get a bit, I wish it was me that was doing that rather than the, you know, getting the alcohol license sorted and the this and that and building the team. But when I actually went, actually, this is what I'm so good at, like recruiting and making sure we have people that culturally fit. And then when I see how that plays out, that, you know, our first intern actually is now the CGO of Lovely still. Like,
wow.
So I'm like, okay, when you start to see your strengths play out in a business and you go, okay, I'm pretty good at that. I think, I wish I'd owned that sooner is probably a big learning.
Yeah, it's interesting to lean into your strengths, like recognise what they are regardless of whether or not they're what you want them to be. Exactly. And lean into them is like a really good advice because, yeah, we can all go, I want to grow stronger in this area, but it's also healthy to, I guess, just lean into the fact that you're really already good at this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And own it. Yeah. Own it. And be comfortable with it, because that is the backbone of every business is the operation side.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because without that, you have nothing.
Yes. I know. Well, it's been such a pleasure to get to know you and understand what it sort of – the startup world is so fascinating. It's so intimidating because it's not easy. No. And it takes so much gumption and like slog to – make something. But hearing you say, you know, doing things with intention and recognizing the consistency and needing balance, it's all really helpful advice, especially to me and I'm sure to Zoe doing this. But you've been incredibly gracious with offering us your guidance, and we're just so grateful, and we can't wait to get Goldie going on
jump on the wait list. It will be open up to everyone soon, but I'm at that point where I'm not quite happy with, like, I just want it to be that little bit better so that I can support more people straight away. So not far away from being able to.
It's coming.
Yes.
I'm excited. Yeah.
Yes. Thanks for having me.
Therapy.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Not Super Woman. You can find extra resources, links and information on our website, which is notsuper-woman.com.
Is that a dash or a hyphen?
A dash is a hyphen, Rash.
Wonderful.
And if you're enjoying what we're bringing, you can follow us on our socials, and we're across all podcast platforms. So hit subscribe, guys.